gonna do? Watch the world go by in a corner. Oh no. I know it's none of my business, but there's something I need to say. I see you, you start flying on your own. Step aside and let your light shine, let your love show. It's a short ride, not a long road. When the rains come and the winds blow, let your light shine wherever you.
Okay. Well, you know, we're bracing here in South Florida for some pretty treacherous rain later on today, at least that's the forecast. And a storm is developing off the coast and heading toward this part of the United States. So when these things happen, we expect a lot of stuff, a lot of interference with our stuff. But in any event, this is typical of what we put up with in Florida. That was Kebmo with Let Your Light Shine from his 2004 album, Keep It Simple. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it's Free Your Mind Friday. This is our open forum to which you are invited to express an opinion. Please make sure you have an opinion so we don't use our valuable time with just meandering. You have an opinion? Let's hear it. Let's hear what you have to say and be prepared. Some people may take you on, which is what I'm hoping, because that's in fact the best use of our time, where we have this trade-off with people with strong opinions. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. 888-874-4888. I see, just by way of mentioning, my opinion about the Democratic Party losing valuable time and valuable opportunity in cutting each other up instead of training their sights on the man that they wish to take out of the White House. I saw a couple of newspapers saying exactly the same thing. Interesting. Henry from Chicago, how are you?
Hey, Eutrice, how's it going?
I'm hanging in. How about you?
Same thing. I'm hanging in as well. Listen, I got a call because, you know, I don't know if I'm wrong for this or if I'm just being, you know, if it's just, I have not watched 1 minute of the so-called Democratic debates, and I've just refused to watch it. And okay. I don't know if that's just me, you know, not being politically knowledgeable, because I know, like, a lot of people like you have to, you know, watch this to, you know, to break down what's going on, but it just makes no sense to me, you know. And I don't know, Eutrice, you've been on this earth longer than I have, but I have
that's a nice way of saying I'm old, but it's okay.
But you know, but see, you have wisdom, so I want to ask this, because Has American politics been this immature in your lifespan? Like, I have never seen so much immaturity in American politics. I mean, it is just, this is supposed to be our best and brightest people running our country. And this is philosophically, it's supposed to be our best and brightest people. And I can find a group of kindergartners who are brighter than some of these folks that are out here. So help me out here. Am I wrong for not watching?
I wish I could help you out, but I can't. Because I'm afflicted with the same issue. It is mind-boggling that this is the level of intellectual force that we have in this country, leading the country. It is mind-boggling. You wonder, what did they all report to the same hospital on the same day to receive a special virus that would just leech out half of their brains? What is this?
Well, you just, I want to personally ask you, has this been the worst you've ever seen?
Yes.
Oh, my
by
God.
By far.
Okay.
It's been really bad. Very bad.
Okay.
And the problem is that this will become a barometer for people, a clue as to how they are to operate in the next few years, maybe the next few decades. This will be the standard that would be expected of people in leadership roles in our country. It's really frightening.
So now, Utrice, I have a problem. So now I'm trying to get my daughter to understand politics, and she's 11 years old right now. How can I give her examples of good politics when all you see on TV is Donald Trump and tweeting this Democratic so-called debates and all these other, you know, imbeciles out here who are just spewing, you know, ignorant stuff? And I'm like, how do I teach my child and other children that I might want to teach politics to? What kind of examples do I give them?
Well, one of the things you could do is, of course, maintain a constant presence in your child's life. And by your example, she will learn how people are supposed to behave, whether they are in office or they're not. So that's one way. The other way is to just let people understand. We can't explain this. There's no way to explain this, because this incorporates a whole bunch of other things, such as, how is it that these very unprepared people end up in politics, making decisions that we all are affected by? You can't teach that to an 11-year-old child. She just open the window and jump out.
Well, she's already, you know, like, my child is already getting that. It's like, why do they act like they're younger than me? That's what she asked me.
I know. It's sad. But there's no way to explain it. The only thing you can do to hope to, you know, fend her off from these same issues that we're dealing with, it's just to maintain a closeness, and by example, take some time to discuss issues from time to time. At 11 years old, she doesn't need to be burdened with what we consider politics in the United States. Not any adult could even make sense of it. But you select, because this is your child and you have a shared experience, cultural experience and so forth, you can talk about things that she will understand and, you know, reference your experience with these things. But she's too young to be faced with, you know, suicidal tendencies because of what she's going to learn about American politics. She can't handle this. We can't handle it. So
I guess I get it, because, like, you know, when I was growing up, learning about politics, we had concrete examples of, you know, what was going on in the American political cycle at that time. And it wasn't as crazy as it is now.
No, it's crazy because we have a kind of invasion of larcenous individuals who themselves have redefined politics to be what it is they want out of it. And therefore that becomes policy. And they shape policy according to their own individual desires, which is to have money and power, even after leaving office. And it automatically means that they will not be doing the right thing. They can't be trusted with it. And
right,
so
well,
it is going to be a battle between your standards and the standards that you are trying to convey to your children and what we have. Any day, you know, we expect something horrendous to happen because we have really incompetent and unprepared people who are pursuing their own thing. They happen to be in office. They happen to be president of the United States. But we discussed from, years ago, that we have a person of deep mental instability. And look at all the people around him. One way or the other, they're not normal people. How could you run an organization or a government or an institution when it is the inmates running the asylum?
And you're speaking on both sides. You're speaking on both sides of the aisle, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, my
both
God. Well, Eutrice, thank you for letting me know that I'm not crazy. And
you
what
are
I'm
not
seeing is
crazy. You're fine. And your job is to watch out for your daughter. Don't let it get to her.
Yes, I will. I will make sure I do that.
Thanks. Thanks, Henry, for your call today.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye. John from New Jersey, you're on the air.
Patrice.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm hanging in there like everyone else. Listen, I've got to figure out. I know why nothing ever gets done as far as righting the wrongs or passing the right legislation or signing off on the appropriate direction to go in. Let's just talk about even being basically honest. Okay, the problem is, with the exception of a few, everyone has got the goods on everyone else. And if anyone dares to try to, you know, turn state's evidence on one of their quote-unquote colleagues, the place is going to go up like a house of cards on fire. That's my opinion about what we are living in right now. And it seems quite obvious to me that not only was it amazing that George W. Bush won a second term, won a first term, much less a second term, that shows me that everything is fixed and these decisions have been made long before you or I actually thought about it. Because that's what these people do. They stay up at night and they figure out ways to stick it to us. That's what they do, and they have perfected it. I'm sure that... God, I'm trying to do Peter Brett here, and I'm so nervous. It's falling apart in my hands. But aside from that, I think that's kind of my opinion about what we're up against. I just saw AOC. Well, by the way, I coined a phrase for AOC. It's a T-shirt. I think it'll be a great chant. It goes AOC, A-O-K, AOC, A-OK. This woman is brilliant. If she were running against, forget about anyone else. If we put her up against Donald Trump, she would win the presidency. That's my honest opinion. I love you, my dear. Hang in there. I gotta go. I don't know what I'm doing anymore. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. Thanks a lot. 888-874-4888. Harvey from Berkeley, you're on the air.
Hello, fantastic, Idris.
Hey, wonderful, Harvey. What's going on?
Well, once again, President Trump and his administration want to remove over 3 million people from the Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program, known as SNAP, and I think I know why. When people go hungry, they become desperate, they will turn to street crime, and with the easy access to guns, it puts us all in harm's way. There will be a dramatic increase in prostitution, which will spread sexually transmitted diseases, as well as drive up unsafe abortions. Taking food stamps away will increase alcohol consumption, which will lead to more spouse and child abuse. The food stamp cuts will also drive up the sale and use of illegal drugs like speed and opioids. So here's a couple of reasons why I think President Trump wants to reduce America's food stamp program. It's my belief that the current legalization of cannabis is reducing America's crime rate, which is hurting America's prisons for profit. So cutting food stamps will help to drive the crime rate up again, and a lot of the country's poorest citizens will be harvested by the police to resupply the prisons for profit with cheap slave labor. But here's another one. Another more insidious reason is that President Trump and the Republicans want to cut food stamps to over 3 million people, is that once the crime rate has escalated due to nutritional deprivation, it turns out that many of these hungry individuals who commit crimes to feed their families and themselves will be arrested by the police and convicted as felons. And as felons, they are ineligible to vote while in prison, on patrol, or on probation. Voting rights are automatically restored a full 2 years after completion of the supervised releases. Meanwhile, with midterm elections coming up on Tuesday, November 3rd, 2020, it'll be too late to vote for many of these people. And if President Trump can get over 3 million people off the food stamp program in the next couple of months, that gives him and his administration more than a year to disenfranchise a vast amount of people who will turn to crime to survive. So cutting food stamps would definitely help to increase Trump's reelection. And there's a comment period on the revision of categorical eligibility in the Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program. The comment period ends in 52 days on Monday, September 23rd, 2019. And if you want, I can send you the website page where you can comment. And if it pleases you, you can post it on the PRN, your PRN webpage, so that your vast audience can leave comments.
Well, thank you. Always with good information. But you know, it also proves that the president and his administration aren't really thinking. When you cut food stamps, you hurt farmers and people who are in the business of producing food. It is not just, well, we can get over because we will be preaching, you know, the dog whistle style, that we are cutting freeloaders from the social budget. And very seldom, and this president, who of course is not a thinking president, it means that the food stamp program sends billions of dollars to the pockets of farmers. And right now, they are in open revolt based on what is happening to them because of stupid, just plain stupid foreign policies and placing taxes on things and restricting access to foreign markets. So the farming community is up in arms about it. It would be a smart thing if they were to recognize that one of the things that they can and should do is to form alliances with those constituencies that will be hurt by this administration's short-sighted policies. But that's one major, they already are hurting badly. The farming community is hurting so badly. And I think they're about to just let them have it, because this cannot continue. I mean, to satisfy some ulterior motive, you're cutting trade, you're imposing new taxes and tariffs, and the whole system is in an uproar because these decisions are being made, you know, on the spur of the moment. There's no thought going into this, no thought about the consequences. And most of the farmers who are hurting, it's not really agribusiness. These are homestead farmers. These are small farmers. And they would have been, if it weren't for these arrangements that government promised them, they would have continued with their individual farms, making individual decisions. But they're deep in the hole for a whole bunch of things, including equipment and supplies and markets. They now have to deal with the consequences of on the spur of the moment policymaking, and it's hurting them very, very badly. So here's an opportunity, I think, where these communities can deal with farmers and independent farmers. There are many of them, especially in the South and Midwest, who can kind of take the edge off the hurting that many of these people receiving food stamps can have been conditioned to believe that there's help. There's help. But now he is saying, and you know, you have to dig and find news coverage of this, but the fact is that this is where they are hurting most. This president has cut off, and people would say these are benefits. No, this is just how it works. This is the farming industry, especially independent small farmers. They are hurting very badly because of this. The agribusiness people, they have access to markets. They have ways of picking up for any revenue lost because of policies, simply because by sheer volume of production. Small farmers don't have that advantage. Independent farmers don't have that advantage. So in a situation like this, you see an opportunity to kind of turn things around because people need to eat. They need the food. People are still producing food, although at tremendous loss. So we should have some brilliant minds put to work on this formulation. That today it's one thing and tomorrow it's another thing, depending on how Trump feels in the morning when he wakes up. Excuse me, this is not the way to run a country. Thanks so much for your call. Patricia from New York, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, you, Trace, and good afternoon to the PRN family. I just wanted to tag on to this this last comment about the food supply. It's really interesting. I mean, it's not just the, you know, small farmers in the Midwest who, you know, grow their wheat and their corn and their soybean. When Trump initiated this very latest tariffs, a lot of the lobsters, people forget about the seafood industry and the fishing industry. And so there used to be a large export of lobsters to China. And of course, so what has happened now is that the fisheries, especially those who specialize in lobsters, are beginning to see their lobster export dwindle as the Chinese are now redirecting their imports of lobsters from Canada. So, you know, it was very distressing. I mean, I have to certainly agree with you. It was very distressing to see all of the attention and focus the other night be on Obama when, in fact, there are so many issues, areas that the Democrats could be focusing on. But the thing that I really wanted to talk about today, I'm sure you heard about an hour ago, Pantaleo was suspended by the police department because the administrative judge yielded a decision that he should be terminated. But the one thing they didn't say was whether he's...
Before you go on, just put a little ID to who Pantaleo is.
Oh, I'm so sorry. 5 years ago, Eric Garner, who was an African-American man who was murdered at the hands of the police, not just Pantaleo, there were many other involved, but he's the target, he's the focus. And he was charged with second-degree manslaughter in the death of Eric Garner for using an illegal chokehold. He was the grand jury declined to file a bill of grand jury declined to indict him. The police department said that the NYPD said that they were going to wait for the Federal Civil Rights Division. They declined to proceed with charges, and of course, the other night you heard de Blasio try and defend what happened by focusing on what the federal government didn't do, as opposed to what he didn't do as chief of New York City. So, this morning, about an hour and a half ago, the administrative judge, hearing the case, handed down his decision that Pantaleo, in fact, should be dismissed from the police force. So within about half an hour later, he was placed on suspended. He was immediately suspended. The one thing they didn't say, however, was whether he's suspended with pay or suspended without pay, because Pantaleo has been sitting on doing desk duty for the last 5 years since this occurred. And not has he only been doing desk duty, Pantaleo has earned more money in the last 5 years sitting behind a desk than he ever earned when he was walking the streets as a beat cop. So I would like to know whether he was suspended with or without pay. The family, I guess at the direction of their attorney, went for the money. And I will say it again, Malcolm always says, justice before compensation. You know, it's as if all of these families go for the money first, and then they say, oh, yeah, but we didn't get justice, as if taking the money first will provide them with the justice that they seek and deserve. So that's all I wanted to share.
Thanks. But, you know, it's a hard call, because in a situation like that, the family is jammed up about money. From attorneys and everybody who renders them a service. They don't know how to handle these things. They only know that their son is dead or their husband is dead. And they don't know how you deal with that. There's no course that you take in how to deal with these matters when you are actually in the thick of it. The attorneys, of course, rush to these cases because what they do, they're not, of course, going to urge that the people hang in there, but because the clock is ticking and expenses are mounting. Who is going to pay them? You have to pay for everything. Things that need to be copied and things that need to be mailed out and all these kinds of secretarial services and so forth have to be paid for. There is no fund that alleviates these people who are usually in serious distress financially and emotionally. Of course, they're dealing with the death. But in the meantime, things have to be done. And there is no money available to cover the cost of basic expenses. So, in a way, they urge people to consider settling. they will make the argument that the case will go on for years, and still it's not certain that the city would settle. You know, they may not get the results that they want. It's a gamble. All these things make people say in the moment of distress, okay, you do whatever you think is best. This is what happens.
Well, you know, Yatrice, as you say that, then maybe one of the strategies that the community can take, and if we don't, then again, that's on us, is that we begin to develop a fund so that families don't have to go that route, so that they don't have to feel pressured. Because trust me, as someone who has sued and know that every time you call an attorney, they start the clock the minute they pick up the phone.
That's right.
You are on their clock for 5 minutes, 7 minutes, 10 minutes, and you get a bill for those 10 minutes. You get a bill for every stamp. You get a bill for every letter they write. I know that only too well. Some of us, those of us who've gone that route, know that especially when you have the breadwinner who is no longer with you, and you now have to say, how am I gonna feed my family? How am I gonna keep a roof over my head? That should not be where people have to go to when they are in distress. There should be a fund, just like every other community has a fund that their constituents can tap. We should also have that kind of fund. And, you know, I don't know that anybody has ever considered that or thought about that, that we develop a fund just for that.
That's it. Because, I mean, we would hope, you know, that the lawyers would have a sense of generosity and understanding, and they do. But they have their businesses to fund as well. They have to pay for to rent their offices and the costs associated with a case. A case like this means that they can't take other cases that would require a serious investment of time, even if it would pay. You know, so whereas they can handle, let's say, five cases, when you have a case like this, you can't handle five cases. This is a case that would consume most of your time, and you're going up against a system. What we also have to look at is the role of the city council. I've talked about this time and again. It's not about just de Blasio. The people with the power to change things are the city council members. They should call the police commissioner on the carpet in a public hearing. They should call the mayor on the carpet in a public hearing and examine why it is an alleged murderer was given desk duty and paid about $120,000 a year for doing nothing. The city council is the power here, and the citizens have direct access to the city council, but we don't understand why you can have such an egregious situation causing reactions all over the country. And right here, right in the middle of everything that the people are concerned about in New York City, we get no reaction from the power structure. And all the members, at a time when the city council has the largest number of representatives of color sitting on the powerhouse agency of the city, they're not flexing their muscles at all. This should be a major point of inquiry. And people should be aware of how things are done so as to deliver to the Sergeants Association, the PBA Association, and all these other police-affiliated associations the results they want. That is the issue here. The city council has fallen down on the job, and the people have not compelled them to respond appropriately.
That
they can fire the police commissioner. They can fire the mayor if they want to, but they won't. They won't go there.
I'd have to agree with you.
Don't say it so mournfully. Thanks, Patricia, for your call. Thank you. Lincoln from Mount Vernon, you're on the air.
Hi, Trees.
Hello.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yeah, I wanted to first of all start with, you know, I think two of your previous programs, you started out, you said, I will start on a good note, and it was a good note, about LeBron building that, you know, opening that school.
Yes.
The only thing I want to say, as much as it was a good note, it also connotes a sad note. The sad note is that the politicians who we hire, black and white people, I mean black and white politicians alike, all of them, and who we pay to do a job for the people, failed so miserably that a private citizen had to use his own private earnings to give the children a good education. That is sad, that the system failed so badly. Not the system, and we use terminology like the system, which is nebulous. These people we hire failed us so badly that a private person had to dig into his pocket, his or her pocket, to provide for the people what we hire the politicians to provide for us.
What do you think accounts for that?
Pardon?
What do you think accounts for it?
Your question leads me into what else I was going to... It's due to our misunderstanding of what the criteria of a politician should be, and also our misunderstanding of who we, the people, are. And it's also due to our miseducation, whether you come out of college or not, because you have to understand. You see, I have said this before, politics functions just like religion. And if you belong to a religious some particular religion, even if the religion is false, you continue to embrace it like it's a truism. And politics and economics...
But you're getting a bit philosophical. What I want you to do is stick to the direct question being raised here in the issue that you are talking about. LeBron James, rather than say, well, what a pity that he has to use his own money, we should be so grateful that this is where he decided he would make an investment in children who've been written off and from communities also that have been written off. That's one thing. The second thing is we see, and we have to deal with it, the community is like, you know, they've been numbed. They're not moving even in their own interests or the interests of their children. LeBron James, let's say it very clearly, he didn't have to put out millions of dollars to build a school and get teachers and programs and so forth. This was extremely admirable that he would do something like that. Very generous and very admirable. But that does not address the systemic problems in the community that will not support a LeBron James, that will not support such an endeavor, that will not fight for its children, that will not confront the system that runs the entire city and which are not supposedly funds for education. This is what the problem is. Everybody is thinking it's somebody else's problem to solve.
The problem
is, you give a meeting, you go to any parent association meeting, and you would be appalled. If children were depending on parents like this, or like these, I should say, to defend them and what is of interest to them, these children have no hope.
Nutris, I live in a community. When I first came to this country, I had finished high school in Jamaica. When I came, it was too late to get into college. So to kill time, I decided I'd go back to high school for a few months. And so they never had a student do that before, so they created a thing called 13th grade for me. Now, in this particular community, when I went to this particular public high school, it had a huge white population, and the school was well cared for. Even though the city administration was predominantly black, you know, mayor was black, et cetera, et cetera. As more people came from the Caribbean, et cetera, the black population of this particular high school increased. And as the black population decreased, the white population decreased. But we continue to have black politicians. Do you know that? These black politicians, instead of doing better for the black people, for example, there was a swimming pool. The swimming pool became deactivated. There were things like trade. Children used to have trade classes, like, you know, they could leave there with things with, you know, being a mechanic, etc., etc. The teachers were previously highly qualified teachers, right? When the white students left, the white population left, the very black politicians and Board of Education people with all their doctorate degree did not feel like it was they needed
is not what, to be very honest, if you, the people of the community, don't make it their business, why should they? Why should you fight for people? This is the question that the politicians ask, and this is the conclusions that they come to. There is no pressure on them to perform. There's no pressure about accountability. The community absents itself. And when the power plays are going on, when the discussions are being held about allocation of funds and what is the program and so forth, they're not there. The people are just not there.
Okay, I went to several of these meetings, okay? And I was the only one. And I stood up and I pointed out to them how they, when the black student, because I told them, I said, when I went to this school, I say it was.
All right, I don't want to, because we're running short on time. The idea is this: you did what you felt you needed to do as a person entitled to certain services and so forth that you were not getting. Okay, I get that.
No, that you didn't get it because I wasn't talking about me. I was talking about the whole system. It wasn't addressing me.
No, I'm not suggesting that it was just about you. I'm saying you were kind of like a symbolic of the power relationship that typically exists in communities that read the presence of blacks as evidence of powerlessness that would affect them. They have no interest in improving educational services for black children. And they certainly don't have any interest in approving educational services for black children when the black children's parents are not involved as advocates for their own children. Look, I've been in the educational world for a long time as an advocate. But it continues to amaze me the lack of interest that parents have in their children's education and what is happening, because education is a political service. They don't get involved.
So let me just make one quick last point, so since time, for the sake of time. So going back quickly to the debates, you see, all of this is happening because we, how we are approaching it. We're not approaching it like, this is like, I mean, even on this program, what we're talking about these debates, who won, who didn't win. I mean, look at, and it's because we don't know what is the purpose of the of a politician. Why are they here?
I beg to differ. I took exactly the opposite position. That is exactly.
Let me finish my point of view before you interject.
I never asked people, who do you think won the debate? That question never arose, certainly not from my lips.
Okay, yesterday you said that the Democrats should be uniting. Unite for what? What should they be uniting for?
Well, they should unite as a party. There was no evidence that they are united as a party.
Biden was party to overthrowing Libya, the country that had the best
That's not what I'm talking about. Look, everybody has a past. In the world of politics, no one is pure. No one is without sin, and no one has a clean slate. I'm not concerned about Biden and his past. I'm concerned that the party has not done the preparatory work here to cover the basics. You have 20 people running, 20 of them. All this money for television time and to pay off these moderators and all this other kind of stuff, but you can't answer this. You can't address the simple question as to why Donald Trump needs to be out of office. You haven't addressed that, which is the issue.
I think you're off base with that too, because the primary thing,
that's your
thing should. Hello?
Yes, I'm listening.
The primary thing is not about Donald Trump should be out. And if you keep focusing on that, you're going to miss the big point, and you're going to cause the people to miss the big point. Imagine all these people.
No.
Yes, one second. Let me finish.
You weren't listening to what I was saying. This is not a regular debate. You look at the environment of the debate, and the environment is that we are in a crucial state. It's very
crucial.
Bad.
It's been
it's
crucial.
It's not ordinary time. And so if you envision yourself to be the opposition party, why aren't you acting like an opposition party? You should be telling people the myriad ways in which this administration has failed the people. That's what you should be doing. You shouldn't be cussing and carrying on with each other to see who has a better record or who did more of this or who did more of that. That's not important.
But how
that's not why you have a debate.
How could they point out the failure of this administration or when they themselves are failures? And that's what I'm saying. I think that you keep on, you know, and I keep pounding on this. Until, imagine these murderers Obama, Hillary, let's run around.
Let's not go. No, I would not sanction anybody. He's a murderer.
Yes, you killed Gaddafi. He's
do
a murderer.
You have any evidence that would substantiate that Obama or anybody is a murderer?
They killed Gaddafi. They were murderers.
Well, look. We having an apples and oranges conversation.
No, it's not an apples and oranges. They killed
because
just like
this is what is wrong.
They were murderers.
The opportunity arises to engage in rational discussion. Instead, we go for the thing that would light up the whole place. We set the whole house on fire just to make a point, and we still are not making a point.
No, you got to stop using euphemistic terminology, and you got to stop being afraid to face
time.
The truth.
Get to your point.
No. I think what the conversations that's been going on is the waste of time in the sense that we're not even saying how we're going to fix this problem. It's like continuing the same illness. That's what is going on.
How are we going to fix what problem?
We need
which of the myriad problems that we have are you suggesting that we, the people, can fix?
First of all, we need a referendum system, and we need to educate the people, and we need to let the people know that they are the true employers, and that when...
Listen to how far off you are, far off the mark. That was not the business of a debate. That is not the... You have a so-called debate. Okay, let's stick with the debate.
Part of the debate should be to change the system.
You can't tell the party what it should be and shouldn't be.
Yes,
they have
something
they're presenting. They're presenting... Why, by the way, why haven't you organized the very system that you're talking about? Why does it exist?
I'm going to tell you, this is my answer to you.
When you have to preface your answer, it means it's going to be 4 weeks.
You're always trying to tell me or someone how to answer. I choose to answer how I choose to answer.
Well, this is the thing.
If I choose to
one
preface,
of the things that you can learn is how to use time. You do not have an unlimited amount of time to make your point, which is, again, going back to the Democratic Party. Very bad use of 2 hours. They blew it. Very bad use of time that they spent millions of dollars for. So if you want to talk apples, great. We're prepared to hear you talk about apples. But you hop, skip, and jump around, and then you dissipate attention from the point that you should be making. You can't tell the Democratic Party what it ought to do and blame it for not doing things the way you want them to do it. But you can raise an issue as to why they chose to do things the way that they did do it. But you have this idea that you can dictate how people should operate according to your political philosophy. It's never, ever going to work. In the meantime, it would be far more profitable, far more applicable, if you're talking about educating the public, to do just that. Look at the situation as it unfolded and see where they failed in this regard. All right, so that brings us to the end of our program for today. Thanks so much, everyone, for contributing. It is very important, just the same, whether we agree or don't agree, it's important to talk things through. And it is important also to say, well, I missed that point. Or I should have gotten onto that point. But we'll get there. I'm positive of it. Have yourselves a great weekend. Surround yourselves with people who bring you good things that support you. And we'll see each other on Monday. Bye-bye. The world go by in a corner.